It's recording.
All right, so to take a look at Title VII before we move on to other forms of discrimination that happen to be seen in the workplace that I need to discuss with you, I should tell you that typically an employee starts a claim. They've been treated, or a group of them like protected group have been treated improperly by the organization, or at least they seem to be improperly been treated. And typically, the employee will talk to the company first about fixing a problem. The company, of course, should take action, at least to the degree that they investigate the claim that employees have been illegally treated. If the company investigates and finds out that there is something indeed wrong, they should try to solve the problem. If they don't, then typically an employee will complain to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission directly. But usually any complaint has to be looked at first by the company to see if the company can fix a particular problem. But if the EEOC gets the problem, they are going to determine whether or not by investigation they should proceed with a claim against the company. Recognizing now, and this should be a little tattoo to your ad, to your growing list of tattoos that you're putting together. So rather than having Ivy, you have now already job analysis, cornerstone of human resource management going around your arm. And after that, right, you're going to have Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is an advocate agency for the complaining employee. It'll fit around your arm if you have a big enough bicep. It's an advocate agency. They advocate for the complaining employee. The EEOC is an advocate agency. Essentially, the complaining employee becomes their client, and they become the client's lawyer. And the company is faced with providing their own lawyer. Because the EEOC is the employee's lawyer, they do not N-O-T, capital N-O-T, do not take an unbiased view of the situation. They're there to protect the employee. So consequently, right off the bat, the company is in bad graces with the EEOC. So don't think that the company, that the EEOC is a neutral agency. It's not. And they'll come and do investigations at your place of business and look at records and this and that. You need to protect yourself by having your own attorney with you when the EEOC comes to visit. Don't you dare attempt to do this on your own, because it's all friendly and everybody should get along and it's all kumbaya, aren't we happy together? No, we're not. So you need to have your own attorney there because, for example, if the claim is based on an event that happened more than 6 months ago, can't be heard. Claim has to have happened within the last 6 months. And the company has to have more than 15 employees, for example. So you would want to have your own employment lawyer there to work with the EEOC. If the EEOC finds against the company, then the company, or if they find against the employee can decide whether to go to court. So it's up to the court to make an adjudication, because the EEOC is only making a recommendation as to what should happen. So off you would go to court.
Will they pay the court charges?
Pardon?
Will they pay
the loser's going to pay them. So in general, what we see here is the possibility of going to court. And companies should avoid that. Employees maybe or maybe not want to avoid it, depending on what they think the strength of their case is and what their lawyer might say. But in general, I would say companies should want to avoid it. It's long, drawn out, time-consuming, bad PR, and more likely the court's going to provide more money than the EEOC might. But anyway. So try to avoid court in these particular situations. The court's going to be jury-based is one problem.
It's going to be a jury of regular citizens who see this poor employee as being unfairly treated by the faceless organization, and they're going to feel sympathy. And so because of that, juries often go, if there's any benefit of the doubt, go for the employee. One of the noticeable differences is between an adverse impact and an adverse treatment case is, and this is also important to know, is that since adverse treatment is seen as one-to-one intentional discrimination, since it's intentional and not accidental, the court has a very stiff fine that they can levy against the organization. I don't want to get into too much detail, but at this point, the limit on the fine that the company can incur is in the neighborhood of $300,000. How could it be more? I hear about all these big ones. Don't ask me. It takes too long to explain. But in general, what we're looking at here is pretty heavy financial costs levied against a company that has been found guilty of adverse treatment discrimination. Adverse impact discrimination, which is unintentional, is really much less. What they call compensable damages. Damages that cost the employee money. Lost benefits, lost wages, lost seniority, that kind of stuff. That would get put back in place in an adverse impact claim. So adverse impact seen as much less serious, therefore the cure, so to speak, is much less serious than an adverse treatment claim, which is seen as intentional one-to-one discrimination in violation of the law. So it's important to know the difference here, to understand the difference between the two types of claims, and to see where the outcome could go in both cases. Okay. The foundation of illegal discrimination in our business setting, in large part, probably 80% of all claims are in some form or fashion part of Title VII or administered by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, so they're going to be similar to that. And so as I go on to talk about other laws, you'll see similarities in age, for example, disability and the like. So let's go on and talk about those for a few minutes. The ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act. The Americans with Disabilities Act was formed in, I think, the mid-70s. Dates aren't particularly important to me. To counter the perception that people who are disabled are really not very good in the workplace. If a person is in a wheelchair, they're obviously not competent to run a computer terminal, that kind of thinking. And also, of course, employers were concerned that disabled people would cost them more on their health plans, which is a possibility as well. But the ADA essentially states that you may not discriminate against people with disabilities who are otherwise qualified for the job. So we're looking at the concept here of otherwise qualified for the job, and we need to have an understanding of what the word disabled means. Primarily, disabled means, to boil it all down, an impairment to a major life function. Disability equals impairment to major life function. Yeah, disability is considered an impairment to a major life function. And I'm not sure if it was this in this class or in one of the other classes where, for example, well, we'd all know that a person with a broken leg or a person who had some sort of car accident or whatever it might happen to be might suffer an impairment. And if it's a permanent impairment, then it becomes a disability. A lot of things that used to be permanent disabilities, like polio, for example, have, thank God, disappeared in large part. So a lot of those disabilities are gone, but of course new ones are being adjudicated by the courts. And the one, was the smell issue mentioned in here the other day?
Mm-hmm.
Is that mentioned here? It doesn't seem like an impairment to a major life function, the major life function being smelling good. I doubt it. But it was seen as an impairment to a major life function. So something like a person has a chemical imbalance that smells bad,
right?
And this is not uncommon that this happens, that would be seen as a disability. And the company would have to go ahead and consider hiring this person based on their qualifications, not considering the fact that they smell bad. Supposedly there's treatments for this now, I hope. What the company is required to do is to make what's known as reasonable accommodation. Reasonable accommodation is the idea that the workplace can be modified such that the candidate, the disabled candidate, could fulfill the job. And reasonable means affordable for that company. So affordable for one company may not be affordable for another. But with a situation like reasonable accommodation, what we're looking at here typically, that I read an article one time, so the typical reasonable accommodation was less than $2,000. So it's not a particularly expensive situation, usually. And usually involves access, you know, ramps and the like, doorways being a little bit wider, those kinds of things, or a larger monitor so the person can read it, has some sort of macular degeneration, can still read the monitor because the print's enlarged on it, or whatever it might happen to be. So usually these things are not very expensive. The problem is, of course, companies just generally tend to stereotype disabled people as being less competent than people who are not disabled, which of course is incorrect. Most of us understand. The Americans with Disabilities Act has a long and interesting history. Over the years, the claims have changed, and there seems to be sort of a trend in claims, depending on the year. For quite a while, it was carpal tunnel. Do you know what that is? Carpal tunnel syndrome, bad wrists. They were getting like 80% of all their claims were carpal tunnel syndrome, right? And it might have been true, or it might have been just some sort of bandwagon that people were leaping on hoping to get a disability claim. I don't know. Bad backs for quite a while. That's sort of going now. Bad backs seem to be quite popular.
If you were like morbidly obese, would that qualify as
a disability? Obese is considered to be twice over normal body weight, and then it's covered. It's covered at twice over normal body weight, and they have generally adjudicated that downward somewhat from that, but that's a rough rule of thumb. And obesity is seen to be a disability, not seen to be something voluntary. Well, a person just eats too much, they should go on a paleo diet and they'll be perfectly fine or some BS, but it's seen as a disability. And so companies are required to make reasonable accommodation for that kind of thing. In general, there's going to be exceptions. The exceptions are going to be, as you might expect, to be job-related exceptions. There's been issues with obesity, now the topic comes up, in terms of access in, for example, airplanes. What size of person can fit working as a flight attendant on an airplane in then those aisles and whatnot? So that has become an issue, yeah.
Well, with passengers, I've heard that there's some airlines that make you buy two seats.
Oh, about riding, I don't know about that. That's public accommodation, so I don't know about that. I'm talking about working in the airline. For a flight attendant, how big could a person be and still work in those small galleys, the bathrooms, down the aisles, and all that kind of stuff? So there's issues associated with that. And they've tried to come up with a happy compromise. I'm not really sure they've arrived at that point yet. It's sort of up, I was going to say up in the air, but that's a little bad. Can't hear you. Alcoholism is considered to be... Depends on when you want to look at it. If you look at alcoholism before a person is hired, then it's not considered to be a disability, and they're not covered. But if they've acquired it while they were working, the courts are looking at the company's possible causality of this issue. And what's happened... What's going on? Something I'm missing.
Sounds like he's playing tennis in there.
Playing tennis?
That's what it sounds like.
It's Joe.
Dude, Daly's on his presentations are so animated.
I know, I have. Like,
very animated.
Apparently.
Yeah,
he had an awakening
last
over this summer.
Really? He's changed a lot.
He said he had an awakening over this summer. And he got divorced.
And he got divorced.
This is the best thing you ever did.
No, he told me, too. Anyway, where were we? We're talking
alcoholism.
About alcoholism. Alcoholism and drug abuse is sort of the same thing. Neither of them before are considered to be a disability. In fact, the companies are required to have a drug-free work environment under federal law. And now the interpretation is that either one of those should be assisted by the company toward curing. And it makes sense, to me it makes sense, because they've done a fair amount of research into EAPs, employees assistance programs, where they help employees overcome their problems. And EAPs for drugs and EAPs for alcohol pay back $3 for every dollar invested. So they're well worth it. And the court tends to favor the company taking a proactive stance to help an employee, instead of just firing an employee who's come to the job drunk,
like getting rehab.
Come to him with drug problems or whatever. So if I were you and your company, I would encourage you to try to take a proactive curing approach. If that fails, then go ahead and fire the person.
What is the EAP? Just like sending them to rehab? Or is
EAP, well, they're all different types, you know, whatever it is. A lot of it's just counseling and talking to people and finding out what the issues are and this and that and any other kind of thing that might be associated normally with drugs and alcohol. So the reason that it's valuable to companies is that rehiring, retraining, and et cetera, is not cost effective. So it's better to spend a dollar and have a good employee at the end of the process. So that's what these reports have said. The ADA has a couple rollout court interpretations that I need to talk to you about. How many of you have taken a new job and had drug screening? Okay. It's an interesting situation. The drug screening aspect of this has been interpreted to be required, changed where the drug screen has been given in the application process. That's the best way to say this. Before, here's what was happening. We are looking to hire people here. A person applies. We do a drug screen. They fail the drug screen, and I'll put here fail equals X. They're not hired. And if they don't fail, okay, they then go back into the system and progress down toward getting the job. Can you see what might have happened in terms of why this had to be changed?
Discrimination.
And what was the discrimination that was discovered here?
They don't impact the job. I mean, I think it did.
What happened, do you think?
People were angry that they were not doing drugs in the performance, and like what they do outside of the work time, I guess, did not affect their job.
Except almost that.
I guess.
What happens if they do a drug screen and they find out that somebody is habitually taking painkillers? There's two ways that you can take a painkiller, legally and illegally, which is defined by prescription, indeed. A prescription makes a drug legal or illegal. And if you're taking painkillers, and they say, we see you're taking painkillers, and you say, yes, I have a prescription because of my bad back, and then the company doesn't hire you.
Well, that's not right.
Right. You had a legal reason to take that pain pill, But you weren't hired, so you assume that they're discriminating against you because you have a bad back, which is to say a disability.
Is it the same with narcotics? Like, for a lot of merc companies, they need to stay awake for days, you know, because they're live and they manage. They don't have to do a lot of coke to come to stay awake.
Who does this?
Like mercenaries.
Mercenaries.
For like days and on end. They talked about, like, James Yeager, when he got back, he said, like, there was, like, rampant drug use and stuff there.
I don't know about these people. I unfortunately have not run into
it. There's actually like companies of mercenaries.
Yeah, Blackwater. You get like $500 or $600 a day, like $700. It's really good money, but you're probably gonna die. I mean, but it's good money.
Right, yeah.
How much is it?
It's like $500 or $600 a day.
To be a mercenary soldier?
Yeah.
That's $500 a day is how much a year? Does that mean as soon as a gun comes out on the other side, you can run and hide?
Yeah, you can fire away. It seems like
you made a good point that, like, when they were reestablishing Sierra Leone, they paid them $132 million and they reestablished that government within a month. And it said, well, who would you rather have by your side, a 20-year veteran, or you have some kid that was fresh out of boot camp?
They're also hiring mercenaries to get rid of the pirating that was going on.
Oh, out there or the Somali coast.
Wait. So let me get this right. These people just get to go willy-nilly kill
people. You have to have qualifications.
You have to have qualifications
to kill
former
people.
Veterans, stuff like that. People
I could go to, like, my farm and, you know, practice shooting, you know, doing some tuck and roll and shooting that too. And I could get hired to do that.
I think they tend to hire
paramilitary
police officers.
That's discrimination right there.
Not based on the military. That's not illegal.
Well, I'm qualified if I can do three rolls.
Yeah. My point is here that A, $500 a day to be shot at is not something that I think is a very good deal, but, you know, to each his own. I would advise becoming a college professor. It's much more fun. Huh?
Really? They pay you to be in the army.
I don't know.
They'll pay you $500 a day and you get shot there too.
I know. But then this is just pre-op for going into being a mercenary. So this is just, you know, this is like high school for college, you know. I think I've understood finally. Yes.
With states that have like done the medical marijuana route, how is that? Do certain states already have that effect where if you pass?
This whole thing is a huge mess because it's still not clear to the federal level. You know, it's okay at the state level, but evidently the feds haven't capitulated, particularly. Have they or have they?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they have.
They can still raid, if they want to.
So it's a huge mess. But what happens when a company says, I don't want to hire somebody who perpetually smokes marijuana? Because when they come to work, they're going to be confused and dazed and doze off in the corner. Well, and eat all my food. And so, I don't know how that's going to work. I'm waiting for this all to play out. The whole marijuana issue, which is now a legal drug, but there are situations where there are 20, I think 26 states that are allowing companies to refuse to hire smokers, and smokers are legal, right? But they don't want to hire them because studies show that there's a tremendous cost associated with hiring smokers.
But now that they don't pay for health insurance, well, they still do. Never mind.
They tend to need more breaks.
They need more breaks. They are much harder on their offices, for example. They just by and large, over the course of a year, cost the company a lot more money. However, I also saw a follow-up article on this saying that you should only hire smokers, and this guy was serious. This was a serious analysis. You should only hire smokers because then your long-term benefit costs after retirement go down substantially.
That's true. They also kill off the other employees.
Kill off themselves, and so your long-term benefit costs in terms of retirement, health care, and all that kind of stuff remain low.
Well, that's smart, right?
So I don't know which way to go with this. Generally speaking, I don't know.
Depends if you have to pay for this.
All right, so what we're looking at here is the idea of what happens here and how we got sidetracked into, I don't know.
Mercenaries,
I'm not really sure. But in any case, you got a bad back, right? And the company says, I'm not hiring you because I've discovered through your medications that you have a bad back. Well, that's clearly a violation of the ADA, hiring somebody who's otherwise qualified because of their medical conditions. And so what's being done now is the companies have to go through the regular screening with an applicant, check them for whether they have the job skills and the like, make them a what's known as conditional job offer, and the conditional is based on them passing the drug test. And then they go ahead and take the drug test, and if they fail the drug test, they don't get the job. If they pass the drug test, then they do get the job.
What if it's painkillers again?
It's whether or not it's a legal drug that they're taking. And if they're taking a legal drug, they can't fail the drug test.
The conditional, right?
Because they'll go through the conditional process. They'll check and say, oh, you're taking pain pills, and you'll pull out your prescription. They'll say, okay, and you get the job. That's the way it has to work. On a back note to this, I've had two, maybe three now, I sort of lost track, students who have lost jobs with Enterprise Rental. Do you know about them? You know, it's the car place, and I have students that have gone to work there. And part of the process is they drive car, rental cars around over to people's houses or pick them up or whatever. And they do random drug screening. And two of my... at least two that I know of for sure, maybe one more, have been fired because they were taking a pain pill that was their roommate's pain pills. You know, I got a wicked headache, and a roommate says, ah, take one of my pain pills, and they do, and they go to work, get drug screened randomly, and they get fired on the spot. So be careful about that.
Yeah, don't they know about that when they get the job? Or is it
they
not?
They do, but they're kids. They don't know shit from showing all that. They're just little kids. What?
It's pretty hard to build a drug kit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I've been a lot of people here.
We were trying to test positive for heroin one day, and like we were just going crazy eating bagels, and like we walked in with one just to see if they'd say anything, and they didn't say anything, and like we never failed our test. So I asked that little
shit, you didn't do fucking opiates, made a bagel to fail the test.
Yeah. Well, it's not the bagels, it's the poppy seeds. You should have just gone ahead and mainlined the poppy seeds, and you would have been okay.
Or should have just, like, smoked weed before it.
Yeah. I'm finding out more than I need to know. All right, so the point is here, with this ADA consideration, the drug screening tests have to be done after a conditional job offer. Don't forget. Right. Okay, anything else that I need to say about the ADA? Basically, it falls under Title VII, so we'll have the usual adverse impact, adverse treatment claims. If you have a non-job-related test, for example, that hurts a protected group under the ADA, you're going to run into the same adverse impact situations. You would want to make sure, then, that if you give any kind of physical tests, that those tests are directly related to doing the job. You know, keyboard entry, carrying a certain amount of weight, or whatever the job requires, you can test for that. But be careful not to test past that. And if an otherwise qualified person fails that test, you, because of a disability, you should make sure that you can't come up with a reasonable accommodation for that individual as well. So just follow the path appropriately, and you won't run into any problems, and hopefully you'll get the very best employees, which is what you want in the first place. I mean, yeah?
What if there's, like, a job requirement and both applicants, like, if they were lifting 50 pounds,
okay.
Both could technically lift 50 pounds, but one, you know, with a lot stronger, lift that a lot easier, you know?
Well, there's a repetitive aspect, too. I mean, maybe they'd have to see how much... how many times does that have to be done in a day, for example? The guy who's stronger, or gal who's stronger, might be able to do it more frequently, greater rapidity or whatever. So they might be able to do, you know, 10 lifts in 10 cartons moved in 5 minutes, whereas the person who could also lift 50 pounds could only do 3 or 4 or 5. You see what I'm saying? So there are measures within measures that they can look at from a job point of view. The person would be less qualified than the other individual, in my opinion. And you should look for that to make sure you get the best of the disabled employees. You don't have to hire disabled employees. You're not required to hire disabled employees, but you are required to make reasonable accommodation if a company can afford to make the necessary corrections for an otherwise qualified individual. Do you see what I mean?
I've got a question.
What they want you to do is to not stereotype people. It's just really as simple as that.
What if you have like two or three of the same employees and you just have to pick one and they're all about equally qualified and you just don't like two of them? Can you use that as reasoning?
Not liking someone is legitimate if it's not based on a protected group status, right?
So if they're
I never could stand those Baptists, right? Well, that's not going to work. You can't do that.
But
or those Quakers, some Quakers.
So if they're protected.
You can't stand those Quakers, right? All they do is sit around, never say anything. That's it. Okay, so as far as I know, right, you can use that as long as it's not protected group based.
Okay.
What about creed?
Or creed, you know, which is a protected group.
So if they are protected, you just don't like them, and they happen to be a protected group.
Well, you have to base your dislike of them on not on that protected group basis. I don't like them because they're a Dallas Cowboys fan. There is no one that I'm going to hire that's a Dallas Cowboys fan. That's it. I'm not hiring them. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Eagles, dark green fan. That's the nature of who I am. Is that illegal? Nope. Right? In fact, I think it's being written into statutes. People should discriminate against Dallas Cowboy fans. It's actively required now.
Illegal?
Huh? No.
Legal?
It's legal.
Have you seen how aggressive Alabama fans are getting?
I haven't been keeping up on that story, no.
They lost to, I think it was Oklahoma State in a ball game, right?
Oklahoma in a ball game.
Yeah. This woman was, this guy was, like, teasing this woman because they were getting beat. And, like, the woman started, like, fighting him. And, like, some Alabama fans drove her up, like, back to her seat. This woman jumped down, like, three rows of seats. And, like, started, like, karate kicking and ninja kicking this guy in the head and stuff because Alabama was losing.
I don't think this woman's problem lies in trying to get a job. I think she has problems that go beyond her unemployability. I don't, you know, like I'm saying, you're going to run into all kinds of weird stuff. Just be sure that you're on the legal side of the weird stuff, right? Which is to say, you don't have to hire Dallas Cowboy fans. And I shouldn't have hired the Eagles roofer. But that's just the nature of these things. We're all dumb sometimes. Okay. The ADEA. ADEA. Age Discrimination in Employment Act. ADEA. The ADEA came about because, as we all know, as soon as you passed, 24 years old, you become a decrepit old fool who basically is worthless. All right.
You can rent a car.
You can rent a car, though, yeah. For some reason or another.
You can rent a car before you can go to school. I mean, after you join the military. You can join the military before you're able to rent a car.
And then you can still rent a car if you're in the military?
No. At 18, I couldn't rent a car since I was
18. How about when you joined the military? You still couldn't. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. You're allowed to be trained to go overseas and do all the work that has to be done by the military, but you can't rent a car.
Or drink a beer.
There's no logic to some of this. But in any case, what we have here is a proclivity here, or tendency, I'll take it down a notch, a tendency in America to have this reverence for youth. And that the young people are what we want in our company. The young, new thinkers, eager to get things done, willing to face the challenges of today. Maybe. Would you say that's true? I don't know. It's up to you. I don't necessarily think it's true any more than anybody else, but that's just the logic that we have here. And everyone drinks Pepsi-Cola because you're young. Is that true? You all drink Pepsi-Cola because you're under 25? And you're part of the new the Pepsi generation?
Cool. My father was Pepsi, some kind of Pepsi.
In any case, there's a thing about youth here in the U.S., and they're trying to overcome that viewpoint by pointing out that people, regardless of age, still have value to the company. So it creates a protected group out of those that are 40 and older. Age discrimination starts at age 40. You can do anything you want to somebody who's under 40, i.e. 39. Oh, you're getting to be a little bit old. I thought I heard your bones creaking when you sat down in that chair. Better change your drool cup. It's getting full, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's all legal at 39. But when you get to 40, it becomes harassment. So we have that break there. The break is arbitrary, but sort of culturally determined, I guess. And there are numerous situations where people have been fired because of their age. They will get all kinds of commendations, and then the company says, we have to lay some people off, so we want to have a new image and get rid of all the old people, so they fired all the old people after they got all these commendations for doing good work. Yeah.
What if, one of them has osteo or whatever? I mean, it's just
osteoporosis.
Like, I'm just saying, if you fired...
You get older, you know all these diseases intimately. Go ahead.
And, you didn't fire them, they got hurt on the job, so you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, aren't you?
Yeah.
The general concern is that the cost of older people because of medical issues is higher than it's going to be because of than it would be for younger people. Okay. But it's an incomplete examination because what might the younger employees tend to do that is going to dissipate that difference?
Wild
stuff, which means that they may not be able to come in on Mondays, for example. So their absence rate might be higher, which it is, by the way. Okay. Okay, now we can start telling jokes about them. So there's absences are higher. Quitting and turnover is higher for younger people. And if you fit this whole picture together, the fact that medical costs for the older people is basically wiped out. So there's advantages and disadvantages to both sides. Older employees are much more dedicated, by and large, much more likely to show up in difficult, bad weather and those kinds of things, and much less likely to ask for time off for whatever reason. So they have an advantage in that sense there. So I think of it as a wash. Older employees have particular job skills that you don't want to lose, in my opinion. Yeah?
The company wants to create a culture that's kind of like these new tech companies and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Where they want to create a culture within the company that's young, for example.
Do you think there are young people that don't know shit from Shinola about computers? And basically, they think that little thing that slides out is a place to put their Coca-Cola drink?
It's not.
Attaboy. And, it's just because you're young doesn't necessarily mean that you're up on all this high-tech stuff. Or the fact that you're old doesn't necessarily mean that you're not high-tech.
My grandma's better than me. I play with my mom.
So my point is here, screen people for the job. And if you're trying to establish a high-tech culture, then I would get people who are high-tech oriented and that can do it best. Now, they may not look like they're the best, but it's going to be the product that's sold, in my opinion.
So if you're over 40, it's a protected group?
40 and above is protected against this random kind of thing. There are BFOQs. I'll talk about them in a minute.
Don't they usually say you're, overqualified for the job?
That means you're too old, or you have too much education or something, too much job experience.
Campaign.
Basically too many years. I agree that is done. But from the point of view of establishing, you do wonder about that. How about somebody who designs fashions and they want to design these sleek and attractive fashions for young people? So are they allowed to go ahead and discriminate based on age? We're only hiring people under 30. Not made, in fact, modeled by.
Modeled by, but created or thought up by younger people.
It's not. One of the only fashion designer I know was kept working until she died at about 75. And her stuff was really popular in New York, or at least reasonably popular. She made a substantial living out of it. So, and it wasn't fashions for old ladies either. It was European sleek.
Was she, like, famous?
I don't know shit about fashion. Don't ask me. But she made a lot of money, and a friend of mine married her daughter and said that she was did really well. So that was good enough for me. So where was I? Oh, this idea of culture. I think it's a worthwhile question. But I would say most importantly is, does a person contribute to what you're doing rather than what they're looking like? If you need to hire people that are, you know, if you need to hire people that look like your tech is high tech, then you're kind of desperate. I'd rather have tech that was high tech. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't go with looks necessarily. Looks can often let you down. How many hip people do you know? Hip is what I would say. I don't know. You say something else. Cool. No, you wouldn't say that. Sharp. No, you wouldn't say that. Whatever. Down. WTF. I don't know. But I know lots of people that look cool, but are, especially young people, who are ultimately extremely conservative. You know, they look cool. They may even have their hat on backwards, but they're really conservative. A lot of conservative young people. Nothing wrong with that, but if you were only hiring younger people, there's a chance you might get very conservative people. No?
I think that's changing a little bit.
Huh?
I don't think young people are as conservative as
they used to be.
I hope that's true. But I still think with social media and stuff, we more or less broaden.
Hopefully that's true. I think that the social media, the impact of that, I don't use it, but the impact of it is unbelievable. It is unbelievable. The stuff that is transmitted around so quickly, some of it good, some of it bad, but it's remarkable. Yeah.
What about, like, summer camps? Can they, like, discriminate against
young counselors versus old counselors? Well, I think you'd have to say that, you know, these young counselors are going to have to be able to take the kids on the hikes and take them out swimming, and we got a rugged schedule, and we consider that to be a bona fide occupational qualification, and so we're not going to hire anybody over 40. But, on the other hand, I can see that somebody would challenge that. I can see the challenge. I don't think it would hurt to try that if you wanted to. But I can tell you right now, not to brag, but my wife can run circles around 99% of the people in this room, boys and girls. That may be too. But try hopping on a bike and doing a century ride, keeping up with her sometime. Yeah, you'll get sliced to smithereens. Bench pressing too. She's pretty good at that. What?
In terms of summer camps, the few I've worked at, it's usually like the younger kids, or the counselors, so to speak, the ones who kind of like directly take care of the kids. And then if you're older, usually get into the position of maybe like maintaining, you know, the grounds or working with like
okay.
the upper is trying to like.
Plus the pay is usually miserable. Who wants a job like that except
a
young person?
$7.25 on the job.
Yeah. But there's exceptions to all of this. If it's really a close call, talk to an attorney. In general, I think you might as well risk it if you want to. But I would look for qualifications rather than, you know, age or even disability. Look for a person's qualifications. If it looks like you're going to run afoul of the law because of that, then talk to an attorney. It's going to cost you $200. It could save you, you know, $100,000. So $200 an hour or so to get talk to one of these guys. So all in all, that's the way I would take it. All right, well, mull these over. I want to say one thing. There are a couple BFOQs for the Age Discrimination Act. Both of these BFOQs allow you to directly discriminate against people who are older than 40. And those, I think, in their entirety involve public transportation. Buses, long-haul buses like Greyhound buses running inner city, airplane pilots, and a few other public transportation-type jobs. You are allowed to discriminate against older people because the cost of making a mistake on a hire is so costly. So let's say you said, well, I'm going to hire this old person because they've been driving tractor trailers or buses for X number of years and they really know what they're doing. If there's even the slightest chance that you're wrong and you got a person that's going to fall asleep or forget their Prozac or whatever it might happen to be, then you run the possibility of a serious accident. And so that's their excuse for allowing direct discrimination against protected group age. I disagree with it. I think it's stupid. I think that they ought to run tests, job-related tests on this kind of thing, rather than stereotype older people as being crappy drivers. Because even as an older person, you don't necessarily lose your ability to drive because you have to change your dual cup.
Don't they just give you vision tests and things like that to allow you to?
What I would say, your reaction time, that kind of stuff. So reaction time, ability to stay awake, stay concentrated, not get frustrated, you know, and get confused, you know, that kind of stuff. One other thing, back to drug issues. Some companies now are using drug screening on a daily basis at the job.
Jeez,
in especially in safety-related ones. We had a situation here in Boone where a trash truck driver driving was picking up trash. A little old lady ran out with a trash can down the street to dump it in the back of the truck. He reversed and squashed her. Well, that turned out that he was stoned. Well, the tests that they do to determine that are done after the accident, which is a little bit late for the situation. So what they instituted was drug testing before people go on to the job. Computer-based, all you do is when you first take the job and you're totally clean, you test clean, is they have you do a hand-eye coordination test. It's reasonably complicated, but not too complicated, and it takes 15 seconds. You do a hand-eye coordination test, and they establish a baseline ability for you. Then you come in the next day, and you're totally wrecked, and you go to try to do it, and it's totally outside the parameters of what you can do. You don't get to work that day. So that's becoming at least a little bit more used. I'd like to see it used much more widely in safety situations rather than just arbitrarily saying that old people are unable to drive buses, et cetera. Anyway, all right, that's enough for today, and I'll see you next week. Have a safe damn weekend.
Hey, you trying to go to Sacramento?
To where? The day I go out after dinner. The day I even go out for dinner, one of my colleagues invited me out for dinner. I said we never go out for dinner. He was offended, but what the hell. Yes? Public transportation, almost all of it is public transportation. Airlines, buses.
Public transportation.
Okay.
Every night.